It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by giving meaning to his teaching, also giving meaning to the practice of all of the great Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. I'd like to begin today with some of the history around the writing of Shobo Genzo Shishobo, that fascicle, The Bodhisattva's Four Embracing Actions, followed by part one of the discussion on offering, the first embracing action. And we'll do part two of the discussion of offering next week. A fascicle, by the way, again, is a chapter-long text bound independently. So this one was written in 1243, if you can believe, 1243, during the summer practice period at Koshoji, Dogen's temple near Kyoto. A few days after that practice period was over, Dogen and his monks left Koshoji very suddenly and went to the remote northern district of Echizen to establish what later became Eheiji. When they moved to Echizen, I don't know how to pronounce it, Echizen, they didn't have a temple of their own in which to practice, so they stayed at a small temple, some old small temple. And the Tetsu Gikai, who later became the third abbot of Eheiji, he was head cook at the time. And since there was no kitchen at this little small temple where they hung out, he had to prepare meals at a house at the foot of a very steep hill where the temple was located. So, and then he had to carry the food up the hill in deep snow during the entire first winter there. So if their move had been planned, they would have stayed at Koshoji until a new temple was all ready for them. But so they must have had a really urgent reason to leave immediately. And there's talk, I think, of other Buddhist groups not liking this kind of Chinese Zen that Dogen was bringing back from his trip to China, and even talk of their burning Koshoji down. This fascicle, the importance of it is that this fascicle was written at a very in a very dangerous warlike atmosphere, where Dogen and his disciples literally had to flee suddenly. And it's important to know that because of what Dogen says in the second embracing action, loving speech. So even in this warlike environment, he's saying things like we heard last week, we should never use harsh language ever, period. So it's not that easy to not use harsh language when you're being attacked, basically. So while the construction of the new temple, which at first was called Daibutsuji, he later renamed that to Eheiji. And while that was underway, Dogen wrote 33 fascicles of the Shobo Genzo. He wanted 100, actually, and he died when he was in the, like, 95. He didn't make it to what he wanted. The temple, which was later renamed Eheiji, was completed in 1244. And since he died in 1253, he basically only had 9 years in that temple, which is still today one of the two great Soto Zen temples in Japan. The title Shishobo, in that title, the word Bodhisattva refers to all Mahayana practitioners, including ordinary human beings like us. So these are called the Bodhisattvas for embracing actions. That's R for embracing actions. So these are the four actions that I'm calling Zazen in action. These are the four ways to express Zazen in our daily life. Probably the most important one is offering. Each of the four have the adjective sho, S-H-O, which in this case means to embrace and accept. So when a bodhisattva wishes to guide living beings and transform them, without fail, she should embrace and accept them and allow them to trust her. And then she guides them to the Mahayana way. So the first item is dana, embracement. Dana is offering. The second is loving speech, embracement. The third is beneficial action, embracement. And the fourth is identity, action, embracement. And in the last, the bodhisattva clearly sees the nature of each living being with the eye of the Dharma, that is interconnected. And then the bodhisattva manifests itself in the form, depending on what that person wishes, that is, treats them like she would like to be treated. However, Okamura Roshi stresses that when Dogen expounds these four practices as Shobo Genzo, the true Dharma eye, he does not merely mean that these are methods guiding people to enter the Buddhist path. Dogen teaches that these four practices allow the bodhisattvas themselves to be free from the three poisonous states of mind: greed, hate or anger, and delusion. These practices benefit both the person practicing and the living beings at the same time. So it's not just about we're trying to save living beings. It's also about we're trying to live in a way that's true to the way, to the Buddhist way or the Bodhisattva way. So I want to now turn to the first bodhisattva embracing action, offering. And the way I think it's best to do is read a passage from Dogen's definition. And I read the entire Dogen, the whole fascicle I read to you last week. So in the first part of the first action, offering, I'm going to read section by section and then talk about what Okamura Roshi comments, to talk about his exegesis of that section. Okay, so you've already heard this last week, but I'll reread this first section. Offering, this is Dogen. Offering means not being greedy. That's really important. Offering means not being greedy. Not to be greedy means not to covet. Not to covet commonly means not to flatter. Even if we rule the four continents, in order to offer teachings of the true way, we must simply and unfailingly not be greedy. It is like offering treasures we are about to discard to those we do not know. We give flowers blooming on the distant mountains to the Tathagata and offer treasures accumulated in past lives to living beings He means air and water. Mm-hmm. Whether our gifts are of the Dharma or of material objects, each gift is truly endowed with the virtue of offering or dana. Even if this gift is not our personal possession, nothing hinders our practice of offering. No gift is too small, but our effort should be genuine. So regarding, now I'm going to switch to Okamura Roshi's commentary, and regarding offering means not being greedy, Okamura Roshi says that Dogen Zenji's definition of offering as not to be greedy is a wonderful explanation. So you understand, offering, when we think of offering, so we're offering something, offering means something we're not doing, means not doing a certain thing. So offering means don't do greed. It's a very unusual way of defining something. And so don't be alarmed with yourself if you have to adjust to this. So offering is not to do this thing, which is being greedy. Why? Because the basic teaching of Buddha is that our life is suffering and we transmigrate within the six realms of samsara because we live and act based on the three poisonous states of mind, greed, hate, and delusion. All Buddhist practices are about ending the suffering of samsara by being released from these three poisonous minds, all of them. Offering is a way to be released from greed. Practicing loving speech is a way to be released from anger or hatred. Beneficial action is a way to be released from greed and both greed and anger. And engaging in identity action is a way to be free from the ignorance of self-centeredness through the wisdom of seeing the heart of a being as empty of self and interconnected with all beings. So not to be greedy means not to covet. And not to covet commonly means not to flatter. According to Dogen, to flatter is another expression of our greed. Typically, when we have enough power to get things we want by ourselves, we covet them and just take them. But when we don't have enough power to get what we want, we flatter someone who has the power to give them to us. And by flattering the superior person, we try to satisfy our personal desires. So that's how flattering fits in. But Buddhism is not merely a teaching of social morality. If a deeper motivation is greed, no matter how much we give, it cannot be dana, the paramita of dana, which is the perfection of offering. To practice dana is to be free from greed. So no matter what you do, if there's a shred of greed in there, it won't be dana, period. End of story. So, and I'd like to go into this a little more. First of all, there's two sorts of offering in Buddhism, material offering and offering of Dharma. And lay people offer material things like food and clothing and medicine to monks or to temples. And they offer charity to people in need. Monks offer dharma, the spiritual teachings that they study and practice. So monks and laity support each other through the practice of these two kinds of offering. And this is best exemplified in this practice of takuhatsu, begging, which we've talked about before. And Okumura Roshi, who practiced Takuhatsu, tells us a little more about it. And I think it's really interesting. And it's such a perfect example of Dana and what Dana really is that I'd like to share this with you. So while he was living at Antaiji, his teacher's temple, he says that because the temple had no members, our practice was supported solely by our takuhatsu. So there were no members to give donations. So they had to get food somehow. We monks did it a few times a month. We walked on the market streets of Kyoto, Osaka, and Kobe, and other small cities and towns in the area. When we did takuhatsu, 3 to 5 of us walked together. Since most of us were in our early 20s, it was fun, like taking a hike. When we go on takuhatsu, we are first taught several important principles. The first is to keep the same respectful attitude toward all people. We should not skip any single house or shop on the street. Whether rich or poor, kind or not, we should not have any preferences toward people. We should not change our attitude depending on the amount of the donation or their way of treating us. We should be mindful not to disturb people working at a shop or people shopping or people just walking down the street. Takuhatsu is a practice of equanimity, freeing us from self-centeredness and our discriminating minds. Through takuhatsu, our practice is connected with everyone in society. Then he says, once when I was begging, a boy about 10 years old asked me, "You want money, don't you?" I thought what he was really asking was whether I did takuhatsu for the sake of Dharma or for the sake of money to live on. I couldn't give him an answer. It was a big and difficult koan for me. If I didn't need money, I wouldn't do takuhatsu. So I couldn't say I didn't want money. But if money was really what I wanted, there are much better ways than takuhatsu to get it. Takuhatsu is not an easy way to make money. It is hot walking along in summer, wearing 4 layers of clothing, as a monk has to do. And mentally, it was even more difficult. I often felt I was meaningless. I was a meaningless, valueless person in society. And sometimes I really didn't want to go. There were days when I felt so guilty living on alms that I quit begging and returned to the temple. I knew it would be much easier to do some work to make money. At this time, I thought of many good reasons to quit, not only doing takuhatsu, but being a monk altogether. Takuhatsu practice makes it very clear whether we do things for the sake of Dharma or for the sake of ourselves. And I'm personally a little surprised to hear him talk this way, because in takuhatsu, it's an exchange. When the monk receives offerings in his bowl, he gives a prayer of blessing in return. So it's an exchange of Dharma for material things. So I'm not exactly sure why Okumura Roshi felt this shame, but anyway, he did. And eventually he says, my koan regarding Dogen Zenji's definition of Dana became clear to me. By trying not to be greedy, I felt like I had nothing to offer. As Sawaki Roshi taught, Zazen is good for nothing. Although I was working on translation, Japanese people were naturally not interested in English translations of a Zen text. I really felt I just received money from people without offering them anything. As I have said before, to be mature as a Zazen practitioner takes really a long time. As long as we are half-baked, Zazen practitioners are really good for nothing. until we are quite ripe, we are simply not edible, like an astringent persimmon. Because I wanted to live without greed, I did zazen and takuhatsu. Because of that, I felt I had nothing to offer. I simply received donations from people. I often felt guilty, and my sense of unworthiness made me feel small and ashamed. I thought that my condition was totally contrary to Dogen Zenji's definition of offering. But, and here's the important part, in studying Dogen Zenji's teaching that offering is not being greedy, I found a deeper meaning of offering. We exist only within the network of offering. We receive offerings from air, water, plants, animals, mountains, and rivers, and people. Our practice of offering is just to keep this cycle of offering circulating instead of only receiving and using things to satisfy our personal desires. The spring flower offers nectar to the butterfly. The butterfly carries pollen for the flower. Each is helping and supporting without calculating how much it gets as a reward. To keep the network of interdependent origination pure is the true meaning of practicing Dana Paramita. We really don't need to gain things in order to offer them to others. Living without greed is itself an offering. I'm going to repeat, living without greed is itself an offering. The best example of this was Shakyamuni Buddha's life. He gave up his position as a prince and all family wealth and became a beggar. That was the greatest offering, not because someone else could have his position and wealth, but because people who came after him could see from his example that we can live without greed. This is what Dogen says later in the second paragraph of the Shogo Genso Shishobo. I'm quoting Dogen, "When the way is entrusted to the way, we attain the way. When we attain the way unfailingly continues to be entrusted to the way. When material things are treasured, these treasures actually become dana." Dana is an offering made and received without greed. When we are truly free from the three poisonous minds of greed, hate, and delusion, our activities are either giving of either our activities of either giving or receiving are dana. They, when we're free from greed, hate, and delusion, all of our actions are dana, period. So again, it's without greed, our actions are dana. If we act based on the three poisonous minds, even charity, even an act of justice, even an act of love can create twisted karma. Offering benefits both giver and receiver, and the gift is also free from the three poisonous minds. Thus, our coming and going within the Dharma world, this is how we come and go within the Dharma world. We simply refrain from blocking such a circulation by ceasing to create a wall between ourselves and all others. And the wall is the three poisonous minds. This is a very profound teaching. Moving on to the next three lines of Dogen. So Dogen then says in the fascicle, "Even if we rule the four continents in order to offer teachings of the true way, we must simply and unfailingly not be greedy. It is like offering treasures we are about to discard to those we do not know. It's not, and then Roshi points out, it's not so difficult to offer with such an attitude of non-attachment and non-expectation in the case of something we don't really need. But Dogen is saying us not to offer only unimportant things with such an attitude. He's saying that all of our activities of giving, whether of Dharma or material things, should be made in this way. If we closely examine our minds, we see that when we make an offering, we're almost always having some expectation of return. And this expectation might be of a material return or some gratitude from the recipient or a good reputation with other people or even a better self-image. In light of this point, Takuhatsu is a very precious practice. The people who give donations to monks don't really know who the monks are or whether they're really sincere practitioners of Buddhist teachings. They simply trust the monks' robes. Roshi says, when I practiced Takuhatsu, my fellow monks and I felt people were giving to the Buddha rather than to us as individuals. And of the sentence, whether our gifts are of Dharma or of material objects, each gift is truly endowed with a virtue of offering or dana. Roshi says, each and everything in the universe is within the network of interdependent origination. Each being is connected with all other beings. Therefore, by simply being as it is, each thing is participating in the network of offering. In other words, when I was saying a minute ago, a bee transfers pollen from, or anyway, that pollen is transferred from the flower to, I forgot, but you, I think you may remember. I'm just saying that just by being not greedy, we are making an offering by continuing the Dharma wheel of interdependent origination and emptiness of self. So, in order to free other beings, we need to free ourselves. And the practice of dana is a practice that frees us and other beings simultaneously. No gift is too small, but our effort should be genuine. In his book, Awakening to Prayer, a Japanese Catholic priest, Father Ichiro Okumura, introduces a story he found in a newspaper about a 4-year-old girl. The heading of the article, written by the little girl's aunt, was, "Dear God, pardon me." I love the story. One day, my little 4-year-old niece came to visit me. Since there were only boys in my family, the visit of this little girl was like a ray of sunshine or the opening of a flower. The public gardens are nearby, so I brought her there. And when the time came to return home, I took her by the hand and showed her how to cross the park, in which there was a small temple in honor of Jizo, Bodhisattva, protector of children and the poor. My niece noticed it and led me there, saying, "Let's go and pray." Since the door was closed, I thought we would pass by, but to my shame, the little girl opened it herself and began to pray fervently. I prayed too, and then asked her, "What did you say?" I said, "Kami-sama, pardon me. I have nothing to offer." I was deeply moved, since all I can think of saying to the god or the Buddha is, give me this or do that. Happily, I did not tell this child to ask Jizo Bodhisattva to make her a good or other, to make her good or other such things. If I had been that clumsy, I would never have felt the purity of her innocent heart. I just squeezed her little hand. Father Okumura comments on this story. Usually people bring some offerings to an enshrined Buddha or Bodhisattva of a temple and pray for their wishes to be fulfilled. Such an offering is a kind of trade or give and take offering. The person offering says, I give offerings to the Buddha and then the Buddha will give me something I want in return. The little girl in this story had nothing to offer, and she just apologized instead of asking God to give her something she wanted. The little girl's prayer was her precious offering to her aunt and all the people who read this story. Father Okumura interprets her prayer as expressing her awareness of the nothingness of the self before God. I'd like to end this first half of our discussion of offering with a short essay written by an Italian abbot in Okumura Roshi's lineage. It will, in two pages, tell you everything you need to know about dana as a paramita. This is just a great little story. I can't resist sharing it with you. It's called The Generosity of the Dead Little Mouse, and it's by a monk named Doriu Capelli. He's Italian. It is a morning in late July in the Eternal City, Rome, I think, and I am taking my dogs out for their usual walks along the Tiber River through rows of trees and the ruins of an ancient Roman port, one of the many oases that this amazing city offers, just a stone's throw away from its hustle and bustle. It's hot, very hot. It hasn't rained in several weeks. Italy and much of Europe are plagued by an unprecedented drought, a symptom of the undeniable global climate change. The river level has dropped significantly, but there is still enough water to provide refreshment and nourishment for the multitude of birds, fish, and animals that live there. Despite the mugginess, the shade of the trees makes the walk quite enjoyable. My gaze is caught by something on the ground, on a spot bathed in the light and warmth of the sun. It's a little mouse, the kind that inhabits the old city and its green areas. Lying on its side, it is close to death, probably injured by a cat or seagull. It's breathing feebly, just waiting to die, panting from the great heat. I take the bottle of water I use to cool my dogs and let them drink and bring its brim close to the little creature's open mouth. At first, it gives a weak nibble, maybe fearing a threat, but then eagerly drinks a few drops of water. There is nothing I can do for it but recite the taking of refuge as a viaticum for a good transformation. That means to the next world, he means. I leave with a feeling of sadness, but also with a sense of relief mixed with a fair dose of self-satisfaction. How generous I have been. I have given relief to a dying animal, one that most people loathe or find repulsive, a true bodhisattva action. As Dogen says, whether our gifts are dharma or material objects, each gift is truly endowed with the virtue of offering or dana. I bask for a while in this state, but then feel a little ashamed of this boasting of mine and try to think of something else. On my way back, the mouse is still there, now dead. its little body has already turned into a home and food for tiny worms, and ants are about to take its various parts to their underground dwellings to feed themselves and their larvae. I stand looking at it and realize that it has become brighter than any living thing. It is the essence of love and pure generosity. Abandoned on the riverbank, it generously leaves its body to animals and insects. It will be exposed uncomplainingly to the sun, the hot wind, and the rain, donating to the earth its bones, its skin, and its fluids. Nothing will remain that is not a gift. This is Dana Paramita in its pure essence. It is like offering treasures we are about to discard to those we do not know, as Dogen says. I understand how much ego, discrimination, judgment, and prejudice there are in our actions of generosity, even those we regard as the purest and most selfless. No gift is too small, but our effort should be genuine. He's quoting Dogen. How can we be genuine in our giving? The purest generosity, the kind that plants, trees, animals, mountains, and rivers have in their unconditional giving of themselves, trusting flowers to the, he's quoting Dogen, trusting flowers to the wind and trusting birds to the season, does not belong to us. The perpetual gift that the sky, the sun, the fog, the mountains offer is beyond our reach. It is something we have lost forever in exchange for discrimination, judgment, and even wisdom. And it is something we will never get back, at least as long as we are alive. We will never attain that kind of love or generosity, the total and undiscriminating passion of Kanon Bodhisattva. And yet we keep seeking it. As long as we have a mind and an ego, we will persist in discriminating. Even with our effort to practice generosity, this will never be as genuine as the generosity of the dead little mouse. I believe, however, that the meaning of our life and the meaning of our practice is just to keep searching, an everlasting search, yet without solution. Quote, the vastness or narrowness of mind cannot be measured, and the greatness or smallness of material things cannot be weighed. He's quoting Dogen. To keep striving for this absolute love, despite knowing that it is bound to fail, in this striving, in this endless pursuit, the possibility of living as much as we can in harmony with this absolute love, with the eternal gift of life and death, is realized. So I feel like I've said a lot, but here are six of what I think are the most important points. First, but Buddhism is not merely a teaching of social morality. If the deeper motivation of greed, no matter how much we give, it cannot be Dana Paramita, the perfection of offering. To practice dana is to be free from greed. Second, to keep the network of interdependent origination pure is the true meaning of practicing dana. we really don't need to gain things in order to offer them to others. Living without greed is itself an offering. So all we're trying to do is keep the network of interdependent origination pure. That's all we're trying to do. Keep the network of interdependent origination pure. Keep the Dharma turning, basically. Third, when the way is entrusted to the way, we attain the way. When we attain the way unfailingly continues to be entrusted to the way. When material things are treasured, these treasures actually become dana. Fourth, if we act based on these three poisonous minds, even charity, an act of justice, or an act of love can create twisted karma. And when I say an act of love, I sometimes think of parents who send their children to college and pay for their education, but they say, but if you major in art, I'm not paying for it to their artist child. Okay, so fifth, in order to free, so that's the twisted karma that even an act of love can create if it's given uncleanly. Fifth, in order to free other beings, we need to free ourselves. And the practice of dana is a practice that frees us and other beings simultaneously. So we don't have to pick. We both get freed. And lastly, the little girl in the story had nothing to offer. And she just apologized instead of asking God to give her something she wanted. So often, I think when we pray, we're asking for something. And she didn't feel the need to ask for anything. She could just say, I'm sorry. I have nothing to offer. I'm so sorry. So here's an idea to help you deepen your understanding during the week. Along with Okamura Roshi's exegesis of the Bodhisattva's four embracing actions, he invited individuals from his community to write about one of the four actions from their own experience. The article, The Generosity of the Dead Little Mouse, is a product of that request. Since there is no better way to integrate Buddhist teachings than seeing, incorporating, or writing about them ourselves, I'd like to suggest that you also recall an experience of dana that you've had yourself or witnessed in someone else and write a little story about it. The exercise will heighten your perception, organize its qualities, and deepen your understanding, all in one fell swoop. And by the way, you could also write about the opposite, that is, a time when you had the opportunity to be generous, but you weren't. That also is very meaningful, like when Doryu Capelli describes his bout of boastfulness. At first, it can seem unflattering, but then the contrast with the simple generosity of the mouse makes us see the latter all the more clearly and poignantly. So at first you could think, well, why did he even tell us that he had this round of, you know, boasting, self-boasting after he was so kindly offered his water to the mouse. But then it really made what the mouse was offering without any kind of boasting much clearer. So you can do either. I do encourage you to try to find a time in your life when you were either generous or had the chance to be generous and weren't. In the name of time, I'd like to ask if you have any questions, and please feel free to ask about any of the four embracing actions. This whole series is really about one thing, Zazen in action. So if there are questions you have from last week's talk, please, it's fine to ask them today also. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. So there are a few questions which have come in. I'll ask the first two, which I feel that they go together. So the first one is, the bee and flower analogy makes me see the opposite too. That is, unless the bee takes, which is greedy, the pollen from the flower cannot offer it, and vice versa. Can you comment? And then the question right after this one is, the dead mouse had no choice but to give its body fully. I feel the story somehow implies that as long as choice is involved, purity of offering cannot exist. What do you think?
I wish that weren't the case, but that is kind of this is the second you know, I think that enlightened beings, awakened beings, have gone beyond greed, hate, and ignorance. And in that state, I think we can offer things entirely without greed, hate, and ignorance. And it's all the more reason why deepening our practice feels so imperative. The two are related, and the first one about I think the point of the bee and the flower is that the bee and the flower don't have greed, hate, and delusion. You know, just we human beings have to suffer that. They're just being their natural selves. And just by being their natural self, just like the dead mouse was just being its natural self. The interdependent origination of the Dharma of interdependent origination and the emptiness of self continues to turn without hindrance. So when Roshi said that the main point of this whole business of generosity being not to have greed is simply to keep the interconnected or the circle moving, the wheel of the Dharma moving The whole point is keeping the Dharma flowing. That is the interconnectedness of all beings and the lack of an independent inherent self. The truth of all of that, we're just trying to keep it alive and part of our reality. It already is a part of our reality, but more a part of our actual experience in our reality. I say it already is because that's what happens is with awakening comes the awareness that that's how things are. And those of us unawakened haven't quite realized that, but it isn't like it isn't there. The Buddha says again and again, it's not his teaching. We're not following some teaching of a teacher. We're actually trying to understand reality that was there before any teacher. So Suzuki Roshi said this also over and over again. It's not Buddha's teaching. It's why Buddha felt he had to teach, because there's a lack of understanding of our own reality and a need to understand that. So he was just pointing out the nature of our reality that's there before any teaching. So we all have it. We all actually already have it. We just don't know it. I think maybe that's the main point of all of this. And maybe that's how true dana, true offering, is just to not be greedy, which is our basic nature anyway. Our true basic nature is not to be greedy. Before we add on greed, hate, and delusion, which is, we say human nature, but actually that isn't our human nature. So flowers don't have that burden, and nor do bees, and nor do dead little animals. I hope that answers your question. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. So another one that we got is, I have worked for part of my life in jobs where I received tips. Therefore, I now tip generously, knowing how the recipient appreciates the offering. I also realize it makes me feel good about showing generosity. I don't know if I can ever get rid of my feeling generous, no matter how I try. Maybe this is just an example of some of your stories about generosity, but I will try.
I'm not sure if this is what you mean, but in that description of, I can't help but think that giving a tip, well, I think it can be many different things. For some people, it's just giving a tip. Giving a tip is giving a tip, just like purchasing a meal is purchasing a meal. But often giving a tip is, I really like this restaurant and I want to be welcome the next time I come back. And so I'm going to tip generously, so I'm treated well when I come back. So that's not being without greed. The first one of giving a tip just to give a tip, even if you never go back to that restaurant again, and kind of like just because, and I'm thinking in my mind, is that so maybe what you've come to now, because you've experienced how good it feels to receive the tip that you give generously, just because you want to be generous. But that the tricky piece there is, one of the examples that Okamura Roshi gave of how we can have hidden agendas was that we feel better about ourselves. That's one of the hidden agendas, that, you know, we're trying to please someone else, we're trying to be this or that virtuous thing, or we're trying to feel better about ourselves or have someone else think well of us. These are all greed. So this is hard. This is really hard. And it requires a lot of discrimination, unfortunately. We really have to suss out, is there any of it there? Can we be as pure as a flower or a bee or a mouse that's dead? And I think only, you can't tell from the outside. It has to be only you will know, because only you know what's in your heart. And then the further statement on this line was that if there's a shred of greed, it's not Dana Paramita. So there can't even be, you know, an eyebrow's worth of greed for it to be a paramita, which is called paramita means perfection. The perfection of offering is what the word dana means. And greed has no, there's nowhere in this picture. I went a little outside of your question to answer the question, but I hope I answered the question. And you could ask a further question of, how is living without greed an offering? What's the offering? And the offering is undefiled energy. So you bring a pure mind into the universe when you live without greed. And so that pure mind is like undefiled energy. So it's like emptying the pure water of a brook into a dirty river. So it's an offering on that order. So when he says not being greedy, it is an offering. It's the energetic, the purity of the energy that's being offered into a maze of impure energy. Well, I think I'm out of time. You may have more questions. This is such an interesting subject, and you're free to ask them in any one of these. There'll be six talks altogether on this subject in any one of the talks. And so I thank you very much for your interest and your attention, your presence, and those who attend during the week, also your presence, and my team who helps prepare for these talks in their own ways. I'm so grateful. Brendan and Zahar and Brian, I offer you my deep bows. And we'll meet again next week, and then not on Thanksgiving weekend. Bye-bye.